Well, I hope you're doing well this morning. We certainly are, and it's a great pleasure to have you with us. It is a Thursday morning, the 27th of July, 12 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. If you are headed to work and you're supposed to be there by 9, you're late. If you, if you're experiencing a driveway moment and you're doing 9:30, hopefully we'll keep you in your car a little while longer. But whatever the case, you can always listen to us later in the podcast or online or anything like
that. How do you get
like that
podcast? What do you do?
You just go to WAMC.org or you go to the podcast store of your choice and just put in WAMC Roundtable and the panel will pop right up.
Wow. So that's how it
happens.
That's
right. It's magic. Let me introduce the panel to you
in a feisty mood.
Talk about I have serious sleep deprivation, Teresa. This is so bad. I have it too.
My time last night was 12 to 1:10. It was that hour in the middle of the night.
I'm getting ready for this interview, and I'm like over preparing.
Yeah.
So I was up to like 3 a.m. watching videos.
Oh boy.
And then you have to wake up like 2 hours later, and you get in. So I think it was 2 days ago. I'm sitting and I'm flat out asleep at my desk, and Alan comes in and just taps me on the shoulder and says, "I'm sorry to wake you up." However.
And I am sorry, and you're properly chiding me for something that was really bad. I should have let you sleep.
Oh no! I think as my boss, you have every right to believe that I should be awake during the working hours. If you are paying me, I should at least be awake.
So have you ever read Dagwood comics, right? In which Bumstead is always asleep at his desk, and Mr. Dithers always comes in and wakes him up, yells in his ear.
But I think you will, without telling tales out of school, I think you will agree with me that every once in a while, that little 5-minute power nap.
5, 10 minutes, 10, 15, 20 is ideal.
2 hours is perfect.
No.
A week's good.
Yeah, that's right. But
given the amount of time and energy that Joe spends to the point where he falls asleep on the job, we ought to take a look at building him a little office with a shower in it and a little pull-out couch. And
I have my car, Ira. It's very comfortable. Very, very comfortable.
So, Ira, that wasn't a shot.
No. Quite the contrary. I was trying to figure out how that could go in the fund drive. We need an extra $50,000 this drive
for Joe's
office.
You know, we're off the rails.
You know, Alan, if you just, or Ira, you should just check some of those things through before you.
Well, I actually thought of that, but it wasn't a shot. I would have tipped it off. I've been burned before on shots, so I would have tipped it off as a shot.
Well, let me introduce everybody. Alan,
too late.
Is
I'm
here.
Not here anymore.
Alan Chartok is. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir. Very nice to see you.
Good morning. You know, there is a communal apartment up there. You're always welcome to go and see.
I know. I didn't want to make reference to that.
So. Well, you did.
I did.
Ira Fussville joining us. It's his final appearance on the program. It's
very nice to have spoken to you.
Very nice to see you.
And that's a WMC board member, by the way.
So watch out.
Yes, all of our bosses. It's nice to have Ira
Thank
here.
Thank you very much.
Publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. And Man About Town, Teresa Bourgeois is with us as well. She is a communications consultant. She is a regular on this program. And as I often say, we are thrilled to have her here as we always are. So thank you
so much. Delighted.
Did I hear
here.
Rich Honan confuse me with Malcolm Nance yesterday?
Yes.
Well, very understandable.
And all I said was, look, they look different.
Don't say it again.
I think I interpreted correctly. I think Joe thought you were giving me a shot.
You a shot?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
It's just that you look
it was Rich's look. I was responding to Rich's look, which was that he wanted to know whether he had been on the program
in person.
I thought he had.
Right.
He had not, and that was sort of the
But I think
inside
when
baseball.
When
yeah.
you when we were laughing at the mistake that he made in interchanging the two, I thought the shot might have been at my weight as opposed to at my complexion.
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
And we should talk about healthcare.
I deny that.
We've done enough of that.
Yeah. Seriously, not Teresa, come on. Don't bring us on track.
Sorry.
Can we welcome
dear,
the winners?
Dear, let's talk dear, about the Boy Scouts.
Dear panel, enough fooling around. Please get back
Sick
to
Sick of me. Hearing your nonsense.
Please.
Good morning, welcome, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We are thrilled to have you with us this morning, and we would love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org. All right, let's get into what has happened and kind of a little diverse list this morning. We'll try to get the politics out of the way, and then we'll talk about some other things as well. But healthcare, of course, is front and center. The Senate rejects repeal without replace. They have ultimately the 20-hour time that they had. They figured that they would work this through tonight, and then by the early hours of Friday morning, they'd have something, and then they're out, right?
Voterama.
So, where are we?
Just what Teresa and I said yesterday. They're going to do it. What they're going to do is they are going to take this skinny bill, and they're going to pass it. They think that they can really put it over on the American people, where 16% of the people, 16 to 18% approve of this stupidity. And they're going to send it back to a conference committee. They're going to pass it. They're going to send it back to a conference committee. And the conference committee is going to put as loaded up with as much of that mean-spirited House bill, that's the President of the United States' words, as they possibly can. That's what's going to happen.
But that doesn't mean it's going to pass ultimately. Do you think that, yes, I agree with you about the skinny bill will move forward and it'll go into a conference committee, and then how are you going to get the moderates and the conservatives on the same page so that it passes the Senate ultimately?
It was Bessie Smith who sang famously, "There's lots of ways to sell it, baby," and there are lots of ways to sell this. These Republicans are in a bad spot, particularly the guys in the Senate. And you know, you need 24 more votes in the House. And what they're all worried about is that on the one hand, if only 16% of the people approve of what they're doing, which is incredible.
Could go down, too, as we talk about this more.
No, it could. It could. This program is very powerful. And if it goes down, you know, I don't think it'll make a difference. I think ideologically they are tied to this thing.
So when you think about the third option here is that this far more limited measure that repeals parts of the Affordable Care Act, such as its mandate that most people have insurance and a tax on medical devices, but leaves most of the Obamacare legislation in place. Senators would then take their narrow bill into negotiations with the House, which passed a comprehensive measure to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. But with that said, to your point, there's many ways to sell it, baby, but they have not had good luck selling this in any way, shape, or form over the past 5 months. So if the more, and I've said this before, but the more time that these bills seem to be around, and if they do them in secret or people are allowed to look at them, by the time you get to the CBO score, by the time, as Ira indicates, the moderates look at it, the conservatives look at it, you're back to where the House was, you're back to where the Senate was in broad disagreement.
A couple of things, and I really want to hear from Teresa, who's the expert on this healthcare
thing. She didn't want to talk
thing.
About healthcare.
No, but I really want...
She knows her stuff.
But I really think that moving it forward allows Trump to beat his chest and say, see, I want a big one, which he will continue to do. It'll go back to the House version. Once they take out these provisions you just mentioned, Joe, the bill is the program is dead. It can't work when it's not funded properly, for example. So I don't see, if they take those three things out, how we can say, and we do, that the rest of Obamacare will be there.
I want to get to Teresa, but I have a political science question, which was actually my original question, and I got sidetracked, but. As we keep moving on, boom, 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 down the line, push it down, we're getting closer and closer and closer to the midterms. I mean, this becomes more damaging to the people who are voting on this thing, right?
I think it does. I think they are, what's the proper political science word?
Screwed. Yeah.
I honestly think they are because when people, and by the way, what the newspapers are doing and what the cable people are doing is they are taking individual stories of somebody who can't fund their kid, or who with a kid needs an operation, or with the husband or the wife has multiple sclerosis, and they do everything but put the violins, and by the way, I would, behind the story, because people will realize, hey, that could be me. That's not just a poor person. That could be me.
They're justifiably fearful. And the reverse of that happened yesterday, after our show, or as part of the show, where, you know, Rich was talking about how bad the Affordable Care Act is, so-called Obamacare, and how it was so hurtful. And he said, you know, nobody got a benefit from it. And then you saw in the mail, I was reading it last night, the emails, you know, person after person emailing in, well, my premiums went down X amount. Well, my premiums, you know, I had coverage that I never had before, and I was diagnosed with XYZ.
Did you forward them to Rich?
No.
But you would acknowledge, to the Democrats, that there are problems with Obamacare that need to be addressed. The overall problem is that the climate we have in Washington, the Republicans and Democrats are not sitting down together to fix Obamacare.
Well, so the Democrats have been pleading with the Republicans since the bill passed 7 years ago to sit down and continue to work to refine the Affordable Care Act. They knew the day they passed it that it was not the end. It was the beginning of the next phase of how we handle health care. And they've asked over and over, and the Republicans have refused to do that. And as recently as 2 days ago, when Senator Schumer went on the floor and pleaded, you know, don't vote for the motion to proceed. Let's all agree that the proposals you have won't work, and let's take what we have and see if we can make it better. So there's no one denies that there are adjustments that need to be made to the Affordable Care Act, but the data all shows that it has made significant improvements. There are millions and millions of more people who have insurance now that didn't have insurance. There's more and more people who are getting screening, so they're getting cared for earlier. Not as many people are going through the emergency room doors. They're going into clinics and other places. So that's the cost curve is, you know, the care cost of care is still going up, but the cost curve is bending in the right direction. It's bending downward, and that's what they were trying to do. So Donald Trump tweets this morning, come on, Republican senators, you can do it on health care. After 7 years, this is your chance to shine. Don't let the American people down. Well, I agree with the last part of that tweet. Don't let the American people down. But if you pass the skinny bill and you keep this moving, and again, they're still now, as far as I know, you know, I read just before I went on, trying to figure out what's going to be in the skinny bill.
So that's my question. And I guess that is where I don't understand. And I'm not quite sure really anybody understands. But so they have voted after the passage of the very slim majority of moving on.
Move to the bill.
They consider it. They've had two votes to repeal. Both have failed.
Right.
That's all theater.
Yes,
In my opinion,
well,
that's
but I think it was important to get that on the record. I'm surprised that the Republicans wanted to do that, but I thought McConnell got it on the record that they were not going to vote for just repeal without a replacement.
Okay, but to my point here is that as we look at the skinny bill, doesn't that kind of leave us in basically the same place as Alan indicated, where we have left our current health care system in a shambles, and we have basically repealed it.
Let me just say one thing. McConnell is been regarded by many as a sort of a genius manipulator.
Yes.
So he puts those two up. He knows darn well that they're going to fail, but he puts the skinny bill third, and that is supposed to give people who voted against the other two some relief, and it allows them to say, okay, see, we voted against the bad ones. Now we're going to do this. And that's why I believe, because I always believe the worst possible thing is going to happen. That's why I believe,
in
and I think
case,
you do,
I
Teresa,
right.
that skinny bill was his real objective from minute one. And it was theater.
Well, if you listen to the Joe pointed out, and I went back and listened to it last night, the Scaramucci, the new communications, White House communications director, had a back and forth with Chris Cuomo yesterday that was very interesting. And Cuomo was pushing him, trying to talk to him on substance. And you know, they really don't care about substance, it's clear. And he said something that was just so completely nonsensical, and Cuomo let him get away with it. He said, you know, Donald Trump is a builder, and, you know, the way you build a building is brick by brick. You just start with one brick at a time, and that we just need to put these pieces and keep it moving. Well, that's not true. The way you build a building is you first, you design it. you know, you have architects, you put together the details, and
you
then
maybe get town, you village,
review,
county approval.
And
county
you dig out the basement.
and you have a framework.
You build a foundation.
Right. Yes. So before you start brick by brick, and that's the thing, you know, they're just trying to throw bricks together and see if, and it's not built on a foundation. It doesn't have any plans. And so just, you know, we're saying skinny build, just so for people to understand, the listeners, what so far is in the skinny bill. So far they're taking away the tax on medical devices, and they would repeal the requirement.
What is the tax on medical devices?
What is the tax?
What does that mean?
So it means what it says. So if you have medical, you're going to. So if you have what would be
a CPAP machine, maybe.
Yeah. I don't have in front of me the full list of which medical devices fall under this, but of course the medical device Boston Scientifics of the world, they don't like the fact that there's an added tax onto their devices. So I can look up what the list of. But
yeah, and the people who have them will say, so good, I don't want to pay tax on that.
Right. It's the companies that want to have this extra tax on medical devices. But so the key is, I think the two most important ones are that it eliminates the requirement that individuals have insurance, and it eliminates the requirement that large employers offer
insurance.
So it's
dead. So in other words, if you take that financing, as I said before, element out of the bill, basically you've destroyed Obamacare.
You've destroyed healthcare coverage in the country.
Sure.
It's no longer, the definition of health insurance. So, but the point
isn't that repeal?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's essentially, right. So,
yes. Well, that's what I said. Right.
But even this is what was disturbing. Even so now, say they pass this, and there may be other things. They're still negotiating today. I guess the vote is sometime this afternoon. I don't know exactly if they've set a time yet. But they were still, as of this morning, trying to figure out what's in, what's out. So the House has passed its bill. If the Senate passes this bill, then you go into this limbo. Well, they might do something quickly, or they might drag it out for a very long time. Either way, they've destabilized healthcare. Because if they do something, if they do this, even if they do this, you've destabilized healthcare coverage in this country. It's no longer health insurance.
And Teresa, they already have done that.
Right.
They destabilized it by basically making the insurance companies are pulling out because they don't know what's going on.
Uncertainty is killing health insurance.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Alan has letters as well. We will get to all of that after a news break, right after this. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us and to have you even write to us. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Teresa Bourgeois making up the group this morning. We have letters, a few, and we welcome yours again. Panel at WAMC.org.
Dear panel, is it possible that Trump is attacking Jeff Sessions in order to save him? The news that Sessions discussed the campaign with Russians opened him up again to perjury charges regarding his Senate confirmation hearing testimony. In order to keep Sessions out of criminal investigation where he might feel compelled to implicate Trump and or Trump associates in order to save himself from prosecution, Trump preemptively attacks Sessions, knowing that it will cause people who mistrust whatever the president does to defend Sessions. And there was a lot more in this letter, but of course, don't you always say keep your letters short?
Keep your letters short and to the point.
And to the point.
Yes.
So in this case, from Michael, Michael, the answer to your question is no, not really. So to the panel, did anybody disagree with that?
No, you kept it short and to the point.
Yeah.
Yes.
Panel, the House passed the American AHCA, and that's another rule. Don't you have a rule about that?
We asked for an abbreviation.
Just call it Trump Care.
I know what it is. It's that we say no
Abbreviation.
Abbreviation, okay. Okay, the House passed the AHCA on May 4th. If Leader McConnell had used regular order, we'd be 3 months into debate, and Republicans could have made some progress. By trying to force it, he wasted tons of time. In Japan, falling asleep at your desk is looked on favorably, working to the point of physical exhaustion, and that's Greg from the graveyard. That's what he says, Greg from the graveyard. Okay.
All right.
And then Williams says, regular order is dead. Translation, our parliamentary form of government is dead. Long live the imperial president.
I suspect you discussed the other prevailing wisdom on Sessions, which I'm sorry, not on Sessions, but I was thinking of transgender. But Sessions seems to have rallied the right-wing base behind him, and Trump seems to have backed off a bit about his threats to fire or hope that he
quits. Well, what's incredible, Ira, is how many people inside the White House are known to oppose this. Everybody, the chief of staff.
Well, now you're talking about the transgender.
Sessions. You know, I think even he has been called back to reality on this one. I think he just feels he has to do it to get rid of this.
It could also be argued that Sessions, more so than any of Trump's cabinet, has been successful in pushing the Trump agenda on immigration and on leakers. That those are priorities of his. I don't happen to agree with either of his approaches, but this Russia thing has driven Trump to make him look like a bad guy when he in fact has done a lot to help Trump.
There's only one thing that Trump is after here. He can't get to the special counsel until he gets rid of the attorney general.
But
that's what it is.
Ira, Sessions announced in March, early March, that he was recusing himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know,
why so long?
Why, if it was so terrible, why is Donald Trump waiting?
Well, maybe because the noose has been tightening.
Until a week ago. I mean, it makes
tightening.
No sense.
I'm curious
There's
to see
else that's
if Mueller is eventually fired by Trump, is there anything to prevent Mueller at some point thereafter to say what he's found out about Trump?
Well, I don't think so, but the real problem is that he won't have the prosecutorial
Correct.
Office and powers that he has right now. A lot of people know what Trump is up to, either in hypothetical form or otherwise. But what's unique about the special counsel is he gets to bring these charges to a grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's interesting in the political side of this is that the far right, the conservative right, which is key to Trump's base, has really made it known loudly and clearly that they're not happy with the president attacking Donald Trump.
And not only that.
Sessions. It started with Gingrich yesterday morning. Sorry.
Not only that, but of course, this gets to be part of the Senate versus the presidency, right? I mean, these guys in the United States Senate, these Republicans and Democrats, don't like the fact that one of theirs is being attacked this way.
And the article in the Washington Post this morning, of course, making the those who are counseling the president are saying not to push him out because of the political ramifications, but also reminding the president of the legal ramifications of getting rid of
and remind Sessions. Us what those are.
Well, you're taking out again. You're looking at the obstruction of justice, right? If you take out the attorney general and his office, who is once again with Rod Rosenstein looking at this investigation, who is ultimately hiring Bob Mueller to do this, then you have another arrow in the quiver as far as a concern that he is obstructing justice.
A real jolt to the system. You know, Saturday Night Massacre, for those who remember the Nixon era, that would be a repeat of the Saturday Night Massacre. And you saw even McGahn, who's the White House counsel, was listed among those who are strongly urging that they not do this. And, you know, we haven't heard McGahn strongly urging that they not do anything so
well,
far.
Well, what about Scaramucci? Do we know what his position on this Sessions thing is?
He says, let Trump be Trump. And
that's a very interesting thing that's happened, and you've seen it over the last few days that Trump has been out speaking two or three times. Now, obviously, he had to have scheduled them sooner than when Scaramucci came on board. But what we've seen in the last week or so is a much more combative campaign-style Trump than we did for a period after Trump was elected, when he seemed to be dialing it back ever so slightly. But let Trump be Trump means keep tweeting, keep talking, tell the Boy Scouts about the hottest people in New York. And
well, don't you think, Ira, that Scaramucci is interested in the acquisition and later the maintenance of his own political power? And he knows that the way that you do that is you say, let Trump be Trump. In other words, play to that egomaniacal sort of positioning that Trump is always in.
So the part of the article in the Post, that I wanted to get to was this idea about Trump talking privately about the idea of a recess appointment to replace Sessions, which is something we talked about yesterday.
We did, yeah.
On
right.
The program. So
here's the problem.
Yes.
The problem is when they were afraid of Obama doing the same thing, they didn't go into recess.
Why don't you explain what a recess appointment is?
Yeah, a recess appointment is when the Senate... And when the Senate goes home, they're basically out of session. And a recess appointment means that the president, in the case of a recess, can appoint somebody, and then they can stay there for a while. Now, Teresa, correct me if I'm wrong on this. What happened in the Obama case is they said, we're never going out of session.
Right.
We're going to have somebody come in. They do it at the New York State Legislature every once in a while. It used to be Jack McEnany who got a little extra money for showing up.
It's
true. The local.
Go see a movie. And a couple bucks.
I think they have to come back in every 3 hours and be present. Somebody has to sit in the chair. So that's one of the things I think will be interesting if the president's own party feels that they need to hold the Senate and not go into recess to avoid him making a recess appointment. That will be very interesting
to
see.
Well, the key player there is going to be McConnell.
If McConnell feels that he, a Republican with a Republican in the White House, needs to not have the Senate officially go into recess and keep it open to avoid a recess appointment, will be fascinating.
What then does that do to the relationship between Trump and McConnell?
McConnell has on occasion stood up to the president. Rare occasions. When there was a question as to whether or not all legislation ought to be considered 50-50, on this reconciliation type thing, McConnell said, that isn't going to happen. And he was very definitive, about that.
So when you have the president tweeting this morning and bullying and saying the Senate better do this, the Senate better do that, isn't that putting his leadership in question?
Yes. Frankly, I think this McConnell deserves it, because he's been such a, what's the right word here? such a, you
Some
know.
Snake?
No, when somebody.
Sycophant?
Yeah, sycophant's the right word. I didn't want to use an animalistic term.
The turtle. You didn't want to say that again.
No.
Ass-kisser, I think is what you're saying.
That is what I was going to say.
Right,
yeah.
But, you hear from the people the reporters who are patrolling the halls of Congress, that they're reporting back that the senators in particular seem to be increasingly distancing themselves from Trump, that they're not afraid of him. And he's still at 35, and we've discussed on this program how if he gets into the 20s, they really won't be afraid of him. But already, you saw yesterday with Murkowski, where she said, I'm not up for re-election until 2022, and I'm not going to worry about Trump's tweets, and I'm going to just try to govern. And so I always make these crazy pop culture references. I believe that eventually that Trump's going to get his comeuppance in the Congress.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like it's ever going to happen, because every time you predict something negative, it doesn't happen with
this
guy.
Which is why you have to keep
And I'm reminded of the original movie of the Pelham One, taking of the Pelham 1-2-3, when the train is careening down the tracks and the old man in the train is saying, don't worry, the lights are eventually going to turn red. And then finally it turns red, and he says, as I told you, it'll turn red, and I just see there's going to be a point where they're going to say, Trump, we've had enough of this.
And the interesting thing about the process of the recess appointment that I'm, fascinating, what would happen if it's the attorney general, is that the person does get put into the position, so he or she would become the attorney general without Senate confirmation. But at some point, by the end of the next calendar year, in that legislative session, the Senate would then have to go back and confirm the person.
That's right.
And so what happens if they don't? Then you have yet another constitutional crisis. So I think to avoid yet another constitutional crisis. So my guess is that he holds the, I guess they don't go into recess. Also, they may not be able to go into recess just as a practical matter because they haven't done the debt limit bill yet. And they need to do that.
Right.
All right, let's hold there. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have some letters. We also have other topics to discuss. We'll get to all of that right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It's Thursday, the 27th of July. What a panel we have. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Teresa Bourgeois, and we have letters from listeners, letters that sound a lot like this.
I used to believe, says Jerry, in universal health care. No longer. No health care for Republicans. They don't morally qualify. And that's from Jerry.
I'd like some letters from people who think the skinny bill is a good idea. I wonder what they think. Right. If you think it's a good idea, let us know why.
Good morning, panel. Stripping the individual mandate from Obamacare is not repeal. It's sabotage. The markets will fall apart. Both sides will point fingers and the health of Americans will decline. All of this for the advancement of personal power in government. It's an unfortunate state of affairs. And then he signs it, Cheerio, Andrew.
Cheerio.
Cheerio. Well, I always thought Cheerio was more of a positive sort of.
Yeah, I did. Well, like
a
British
a
salutation.
A sign-off, yeah. Or a breakfast.
Yeah.
Cereal.
Yeah. Stephen said, good morning, Ira. Put you first. Good morning, Ira, Teresa, Joe, and Alan. Gee, if I were Jeff Sessions, I wouldn't be too eager to leave the country right now. And that's from Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I don't go away.
I don't know what's going to happen when you
come
back.
A recess appointment.
Right.
Joe's going to.
We're an emergency meeting of the board.
So is the, when we talk about this, though, with Jeff Sessions, and again, far be it from me to compliment this man, but he seems to be handling all of this as well as anybody could handle something like this.
Yeah, he's keeping his head down, and he says, "I'm not going to resign." And I think he knows that he's got public opinion on his side. Don't you think it's the old line about politics make strange bedfellows? And how many of us who are just don't like Sessions and all that he stands for are on his side in this case?
Well that's right.
You feel like a little sorry for him.
That's right. The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
But also you can imagine that all of his former colleagues in the Senate are calling him and saying, you have to hang in there. We'll have your back. And the conservatives are saying, hang in there. And, because this whole issue of the rule of law, it'll be a constitutional crisis, another one.
Or maybe somebody's giving him some medication. I don't know why he's so quiet.
It was fascinating to me that when Donald Trump goes to Youngstown, Ohio for his rally, he spent a fair bit of time talking about the rule of law and how he upholds
the rule of law.
And so clearly it's getting to him that people are pressuring him about total disrespect for the rule of law.
It's the same speech in which he compared himself to the only Abraham Lincoln was a better president.
That whole speech was so scary.
Before the Boy Scouts?
I was talking about Youngstown.
Youngstown. Okay.
But in both cases, I'm fascinated by the speech is predictable, but the crowd response, particularly the Boy Scouts crowd response, the adulation for him, I just am fascinated by that in a scary way.
Well, they're little kids. There's a president of the United States who's standing up there. And, he's teaching them how to bully. That's what he's doing.
Well, and he taught them more than that. The lovely story about his friend who went out and
to the hottest people in New York.
A lot of money and then bought a yacht, and then you could have really good sex on the yacht.
Yeah.
That was a lovely story.
Did he say that to the Boy Scouts?
Yes.
It was implied very strongly, right? I mean, yes, he did say that.
There was if you watch the speech in Youngstown, I only saw a clip, but it was a funny clip. As usual, they have this crowd of supporters right behind him who were all handpicked. And there was a woman standing behind him next to a younger man. And Trump had one of these crazy applause lines. And the whole crowd, including this woman, went crazy. And she turned to the person next to her, and you could read her lips saying, "What did he say?" It didn't matter because she was already cheering. So it's just a Pavlovian.
But we do really need to understand the attraction, that he still is has an enthusiastic base? And what is it he's saying that
yeah, he's saying that he's telling people in the Rust Belt that their jobs are going to come back in industries that are not going to bring jobs back. It's sad. It's cruel. It's all sorts of things. And he's getting away with it, at least among this 35%. It's just mind-boggling how he will do things like some of the things he said at the Boy Scouts or the Access Hollywood tapes going all the way back, the sorts of things that his base would ordinarily be repelled by. Repelled, is that the right word?
Yeah.
And yet they stick by him. They're overlooking it. I don't understand it.
The Christian conservatives in particular,
yeah,
I wonder about
that. I don't
that
understand
either.
It.
Okay, you want more or not?
Yes. Oh, yeah, go.
Okay, all right, here we go. Good morning, panel from Jay. Doesn't Congress have a good gold-level Obamacare type of health insurance? Oh, it's, I think, a good deal better than Obamacare. I don't understand, then, how the Senate subjected the American people to anything less. How can they do this in good conscience? Jay from Lakefield. Well, there's a lot in good conscience that's not good conscience going on right now.
One of the things, even this so-called skinny bill, the CBO did a quick score of it last evening, and under the framework that they knew of last night. Now there are changes going on today. But 15 million plus would lose their health insurance immediately, and premiums would go up at least 20%.
Terry writes, writing to officials, I've been moved to reach out to my elected officials motivated by current and future atrocities perpetrated by Trump. Will this truly do any good, or are we doomed, despite exercising our freedom of speech, parenthesis, supposing we don't lose that too? And that's Terry from Argyle. And as you remember, Argyle is where?
Everybody wears socks.
Beautiful
yeah.
socks.
Yeah.
I think that the reason we don't have a bill yet is because of public engagement. I think that the reason they haven't gotten away with decimating our health care and passing deep cuts in Medicaid and such is because there has been such a strong public outcry, and it needs to continue.
Yeah. James says, Trump's hit list. Trump has checked off another box on his president's hit list and has reversed allowing transgender patriots from serving in the military. This from a man who is accused of faking a bone spur to avoid military service. Trump is a deeply disturbed MOY man boy, a possible traitor, a ticking time bomb, threat to the U.S. and the world, and must be removed from office. Jim, to profess to what?
No, that's a long list.
It's too long, yeah. Jim, to paraphrase Roman Senator Cato, Trump must be destroyed. I will never say. Because, you know, people write me about illegal ways of getting Trump out of office and the rest of it. It bothers me a great deal because it transfers the orderly. Even if he's terrible, we do have one thing in this country, and that is the peaceful transference of power. And that's the way we ought to stay with it. Deborah says, dear panel, I think it's fascinating that the Senate has finally found its backbone when it comes to protecting its own, which, of course, has a segregationist history. Deborah.
All right. With that, we will take a pause and we'll get news. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Teresa Bourgeois. I'm Joe Donahue, and we will return after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable Panel. I'm Joe Donahue. A reminder who's on with us this morning. Dr. Alan Chartok is here. Everyone's checking their devices. Look at this. Everyone's busy.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all doing their thing.
Yeah.
Alan Chartok is here. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a good warning. Cut it out. You were telling us, cut it out. Pay attention.
I was saying good morning, not good warning.
No. But I'm saying it was a good warning. You know, cut it out. Pay attention.
I was actually impressed. I like that people are like looking up stuff during the break, getting ready for the segment at hand.
It's as American as apple pie. And there are some things, of course, I don't want to get it to divert us too much from the matter at hand. But I have a very close relative who was sitting in a wonderful coffee shop yesterday. And there was a lady on the phone. You know the lady on the phone? And she's making so much noise that nobody could concentrate. I don't like that. I don't like it in a train. I don't like it.
I was in her waiting room the other day, and the same thing was happening. I'm not interested in your life. Keep quiet.
I don't want to try to like beat you on in the stories here, but at a concert the other night.
Yeah.
A concert.
Oh, they
in the middle
it.
Of the concert.
Yeah.
And they're talking.
Was it a classical concert?
It was not a classical concert.
Yeah, yeah.
It was one of those rock and roll concerts.
Cyndi Lauper?
Yes.
I saw the
oh
picture.
Oh, my God, that's funny.
And was Rod
Cindy
Stewart
what?
On that? Is she
yes,
opened
he was.
For Ron Stewart?
Yes.
Yeah. How is he? Is he still able to stand?
Yeah, he's 72.
What's his name?
Rod Stewart.
So a young guy.
Yeah, 72. And man, he looks great. He really does. And he comes out and he does a lot of moves that look like he's dancing and that he's very active, but he does a lot from a stool.
Well, that was the old James Brown in his last year or two. He would make it look like he was doing the old James Brown, and he basically was standing still and moving his hands.
Yeah, but hey.
And yesterday was Mick Jagger's birthday, and you know how old he is?
No. I do not.
74.
Wow.
Another youngster.
Yes, but can you imagine doing on stage at your age at
76? Absolutely.
You could. Well, that's
and I tell you.
You have a banjo. That gives you something to prop up with.
Jake. Now, Jake, that was a hit.
That was a shot.
Now, JT, who is, is in his 60s, upper 60s?
James Taylor, Justin Timberlake, yes.
Yeah. And
for
he
our
really,
younger listeners.
He moves. Boy, he really moves.
He does, and he's just that's some great.
I think he just sits at a stool the whole time.
No,
does
he get up
around?
No kidding.
Yeah, but he's almost 70, 69 years old.
Yeah,
kidding. And you know what Teresa says about this? Let's talk about health care.
I don't know. Were you going to chime in, Teresa? Were you going to say?
Well, again, I'm so boring, but I was trying to.
You were anything
not
but
at
boring.
All.
No, there is a texting and healthcare story, and I'm trying to figure out. So you bring us
right back full circle.
She's
Thank
what
you.
They called in the Wild West a wrangler.
Yes. All right.
And I think it was Ron Johnson, but actually they were on an air. One of the senators was on an airplane, and he was texting a Republican senator. He was texting about the bill. And the person sitting next to him was reading his texts, and he was complaining about how bad the bill is. And so that person told the Washington Post the text that he was reading. And so they did a story about it yesterday. And I think it was Ron Johnson, but basically, proof that the Republicans
Post.
Don't like the.
Was he
the
doing it while the plane was in the air?
Yeah.
I hope not.
I don't know.
Well, in some places you can do that.
Oh, can you now?
Yeah. Well, if they have Wi-Fi, you can go
JetBlue
through.
I recommend JetBlue highly. You get free Wi-Fi. And it's really a lifesaver coast to coast.
That's fantastic.
You can't call, but you can
text. No, you're right. You can't use your phone, but you can text and then use the internet.
I have to correct myself, too, that, in fact, the CBO scored the skinny bill, and it's going to be, I said $15 million. That's what I read last night. It's actually now up to $18 million or more immediately.
Immediately. We're not talking 2020.
Immediately will lose, and premiums will go up 20%.
Don't you think that the Republicans' motivation for all, and they've dug themselves a hole, it was, A, they weren't going to agree or praise anything at all that Obama was pushing, one, and two, that because they weren't helping the Democrats went on their own. And so they're now, it's the reverse is happening now. But the specifics of the health care plan then and now meant a lot less to them than the fact that Obama was trying to do a signature success story.
Yeah, I think it was a rhetorical talking point that they got trapped in.
They got trapped in it.
They were never held accountable. For when they said we're going to repeal and replace, it's going to be so much better. We're going to lower your premiums. More people will be insured. It's going to be great. So they were allowed by the media and the Democrats to get away with saying that for 7 years, and they never had to be specific about how they were going to do that. But anybody who understands healthcare knows that no one. It's very
yeah,
very, complicated,
very complicated,
and no one has put anything on the
right,
table so
here's
far.
7 or 8 years later, and they still don't have a plan.
If there was a way to do that as easily as they described, the Democrats would have taken that way.
All right, I want to get to a couple of issues that, believe it or not, are not Trump related.
Mm, no.
Okay.
Oh, I'm not prepared.
God. All right, go ahead.
All right, one, Cuomo. No links to Cuomo. Their ad was labeled client Andrew Cuomo. This is an article from the New York Times. At the end of a video promoting Governor Cuomo's immigration policies, a disclaimer noted the advertisement's funding source, an obscure anti-discrimination group called New Yorkers United Together. The fledgling group, which was financed only the one online video, claims it has no ties to any politician. Two of the group's co-founders said in interviews that the governor had nothing to do with the ad other than agreeing to appear in it alongside several celebrities. But A closer examination shows otherwise. All of the group's co-founders are close friends of Governor Cuomo's. Three celebrities who spoke in the ad said that they were asked to do so by Mr. Cuomo's office, and another person said he was asked by the office to identify others who might be willing to participate. So, is this a way of skirting campaign finance rules?
You know, it's just despicable. That's what it is.
That's what the critics are saying. So I'm asking...
You know, is it a way of look? They do it all the time. They form outside groups. The outside groups. When Cuomo took office, he formed a similar group. And you know, there's no way you're going to make it into a crime. But it is not normal, and it's not ethical.
I agree. I'm wondering. I was thinking while you were talking. Was it Andrew Cuomo or was it George Pataki who got in the soup with the I Love New York ads?
Yeah, the signs.
Well, no, the signs was recent, but when
George Pataki. I worked for the controller's office for a little while and doing press in their press office, and they got into trouble.
Yeah, he appeared in the I Love New York ad so that it could come across as a fundraising mechanism for him.
No.
Using government, using New York State taxpayer funds to make commercials.
Yeah, but that's to your point. They all do it.
Well, that's a little bit different, but I agree.
Actually, it's to my mother's point.
No.
She was saying they're all doing it now.
But, Alan, I mean, I'd just be curious your view on this. They didn't even seem to hide it very well. That's the part that I was amazed by.
You know what that's called? Arrogance. Because you're getting away with it, and somebody scratches their head what's a good word? It's arrogance. You think you'll get away with it forever, and then somebody blows the whistle. That's where, God bless reporters and columnists and others, that's why we have them.
Will anyone care?
What'd you say?
Will anyone care? Will they get away with it even still?
Well, you care if the New York Times... Look, you're going to run for governor in 2018. You know you have to win in order to run for president. You have the summer of hell with the subways, which are so bad right now in New York. You get into a stupid fight with de Blasio because de Blasio doesn't know enough to shut up. You know, Cuomo was sinking on his own way. So de Blasio gets on the subway and goes after Cuomo, and then the tabs go after de Blasio as a result. Had he shut up, Cuomo would have had to bear all of the problems for this. What?
Keep shut,
Mrs.
Right.
Wick.
How does he cope with all of these budget cuts that are going to
come down because of the federal changes? He's got a big problem. They all have a big problem. Because if the Medicaid cuts happen, there's going to be a gigantic hole in the budget. And, of course, they're cutting the budgets like crazy. And that's why Cuomo went down to Washington to try to get some transportation money. Yeah, right. Donald Trump's going to give Cuomo some transportation money.
And I did not read anything about this, but I'm hearing that Donald Trump has been critical of upstate New York. Did I miss something?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Joe. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I basically said that because of the inability to want to go after this job. What was the Fox? What was it? Foxconn.
Foxconn.
Yeah.
Yeah. That people should just run from their houses and go.
People from upstate New York should go to Wisconsin.
Oh, to get jobs.
And that must be good news for John Faso, at least Stefanik, when they hear that the president of the United States is saying, leave your congressional district and go over, go to Wisconsin.
You know,
did I ever tell you I wrote a book about Wisconsin? So I know a lot about it.
You do.
The reason I was asking about the Cuomo and how he's going to—I mean, I just was looking at the education cuts at the federal level because yesterday, we're going to mention Trump again, but he gave his quarterly salary check to the Department of Education,
yes,
$100,000. But people pointed out, well, you're cutting $9 billion from the education budget. So I was going back and looking at all the programs that are going to be cut. And at the state level, you know, Cuomo, all the governors are going to have a lot of hard decisions. And what's he going to do about that when he's running for president?
I promised that we were going to move away from Trump, but I do. This Scaramucci story is interesting that he called into New Day this morning on CNN. He was on yesterday. And blamed Chief of Staff Reince Priebus for leaking information. He was there for 30 minutes, and he copied Priebus in a tweet about leaks, later deleted the tweet, and then told CNN before his interview that the message was not a call for the FBI to investigate the Chief of Staff, Scaramucci, whose relationship with Priebus has been fraught since he was initially unable to secure a White House job after Donald Trump's election, did little to show his relationship with Priebus was changing and said it was up to the chief of staff to show he was not leaking. When I put out a tweet and I put Reince's name in a tweet, they'll all make the assumption that it's him because journalists know who the leakers are. So if Reince wants to explain he's not a leaker, let him do that. But let me tell you about myself. I'm a straight shooter, and I'll go right to the heart of the matter.
Ugh.
Well, his tweet did call for a FBI investigation. I saw that tweet last night before they deleted it.
So...
Well, and it is.
So really, who's next?
And he said, I'm going to stop the infighting, and then he started infighting.
Yeah, there's going to be a fist fight in the West Wing if there hasn't already been one.
That we don't know about.
Scaramucci is a street guy, just like Trump is.
With a Harvard Law degree, by the way.
He's got a, yeah, which he reminds people, but he's cut from the same cloth. The only reason that he's not Trump is that Trump was on TV with a successful show and has buildings with his name on it all. But they're almost separated at birth, and you know, he's just going to say stuff like this that's provocative. And you know, God bless the leakers. Let's have more of them, because that's the only way we're going to find out about what's going on in this government.
All right. Other story I wanted to get to, which is non-Trump related, which is a story that's been brewing in this area but has hit all of the major newspapers and art sections of papers across this country. Two prominent museum organizations said on Tuesday they are deeply opposed to plans by the Berkshire Museum in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, to sell 40 works and use the proceeds for its endowment and to improve its building. The plan has been around for a little bit, for a few weeks now, but finally, the plan of what works would actually be sold at a Sotheby's auction by the end of this year was announced on Monday. The likes of artists like Norman Rockwell, Frederick Church, Albert Bierstadt, and Alexander Calder are on that list of works to be sold. The groups say that this would violate the ethical codes of both organizations, the American Alliance of Museums and the Association of Art Museum Directors, which emphasize stewardship and hold that artwork should be sold only in specific circumstances to add new works or care for existing works. What the Berkshire Museum is hoping to do is to become an innovative 21st century institution and raise some $40 to $60 million in the sale and become more science-oriented. And in doing that, you sell off your stuff, and then you make the money, and then you build a new museum.
Well, Laurie Norton Moffat, who is the head of the Norman Rockwell, and
yes,
who we love here, really had a lot of courage, and she rode to the Berkshire Eagle and made it clear that this was a very bad idea. And it is. It's like, you know, selling your. Why don't we just start selling the children, or why don't we start selling the studios here at WAMC so that we can stay afloat? It's ridiculous. And these are great people who give great prestige, these artists, great prestige to the museum, if and when they put the pictures up, which they don't always do. Look, if you're hired to be the director of a museum, and I don't want this to be seen as a personal attack because I don't even know this guy.
Van Shields, yeah, executive director of the Berkshire Museum.
Van, I knew his name.
What you don't do
is you go out and you raise money. You raise money. Look, I was on our board of trustees. I think it's fair to say that were I not to be able to steward us to the point where, you know, we're making it now, you know, I would be a goner, wouldn't I, Aaron?
It could happen any time.
Yeah. No, I would be. I would be a goner, and so would you. And so,
but I'm not on the payroll.
You know, it's a terrible move. They're not pulling back on it. If they want to make more science stuff and build more to do science and honor the scientists will give them some money and things, and the innovators. That's fine, but you don't sell Rockwell's and Frederick Church and all of those others. That's a disgrace.
If a museum is to be, we call the Smithsonian our nation's attic, but if you have the Berkshire Museum, which has a long and rich history, and Norman Rockwell gives these paintings, one of them
he
being
did.
Shovelton's Barbershop, which is a famous Norman Rockwell painting, and you give it to the institution, I assume with the hopes of keeping it in the community, of allowing people to see what it is that they have. So to sell that and to have it come out of the attic just sounds a lot to me like your mother on her deathbed says, I want to keep this in the family, and then upon her passing, you turn around and sell the dining room table.
Well said.
Which
better than I did.
So I don't know how you come around to that. And I guess that's some of the concern within the art community is to say, okay, but why can't if you came to us and said, let's try to raise the money, or can we do something else, that there would be ways to do that.
Yes.
That's what I was wondering. Could a result of this, and I don't know this world at all, but could a result of this be that they rally around and do raise the money that they need? Or is this person really just trying to move the museum in a different direction? That's what I'm not clear about. Is he desperate for money, or is he trying to move the museum in a different direction?
I think it's both. I think certainly he's desperate for the money, and I think that it's a bad idea.
And would the community come together,
no.
the larger arts community,
no,
and help him raise money?
No, on the contrary, they're going to be angry with him.
He said to the New York Times, we can't care for our collection if we don't exist.
Right.
The fact is we're facing an existential threat. And the board chose the interests of this institution over the interests of these national professional organizations.
Wasn't there this issue come up with a Pennsylvania museum and that was in litigation
yes.
for a while? Was it Wyeth or who
well,
was it?
Look,
wasn't there
Brandywine?
Look,
Brandywine,
you get to be the head of a museum or of any arts organization, and your major role is going to be to raise the money, to make sure that you have the money to go forward. And it must be awfully tempting to say, okay, let's sell the crown jewels, but it's a mistake.
So what do you think? Should he step aside and let somebody step in who can raise the money, or do the community come together and help them raise the money, or do they sell the... Would there be litigation if he tries to sell
them? No, he's selling them.
As of right now...
Yeah.
It's all but done, I think, as
yes.
far as that. I mean, they're setting up a date, and Sotheby's is coming in, and the stuff will be sold.
And it can't be stopped?
Now, the one thing that Lori Norton Moffat, that Alan referenced from the Norman Rockwell Museum, has asked, I thought in a great editorial, to just put a pause on it, to let people think about it, to
sure.
have a discussion about it, to put it into a debate, if you want.
Right.
To vote to at least put it into a discussion so you can actually
like a skinny bill.
Right.
That's right. And see what happens. But it has become
fascinating.
It has now become a big story, obviously.
Close celeb.
Maybe someone with a lot of money will buy the pictures and then loan them back to the
Right.
I don't know. Where
right, right.
Guys, it's Ian. I just wanted to give a forward promotion to the fact that we'll be talking with Van Shields, who is the executive director of the Berkshire Museum, on Midday Magazine today.
Oh, that's nice.
Excellent.
Good. Thank you, Ian.
Excellent. We will have that coming up. Joseph Clem of the American Alliance of Museums said that someone from each of the two museum groups had spoken on the phone with a Berkshire Museum official about the planned sale. And... the groups continue to stand by and are working, but again, we'll see what happens.
Sounds like it needs a GoFundMe site.
For $40
million. $40 million
GoFundMe. You all have educated me, because when I don't know this world, and when I first heard this story, it sort of made sense to me. If they need money, they ought to sell the works. But now that I'm hearing this...
You have to be careful.
Yeah, you have to be careful.
Selling your
Anybody
want to
buy the Linda?
All right. We're out of time. My thanks to everybody. Teresa, thank you. Ira, always a pleasure. Good luck.
That's it. See you soon, we
yes,
hope.
Yes, indeed. And Alan, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
We will.
Judith Eng, Chris Churchill, Alan, I'll be on the panel tomorrow, so we'll look forward to that. We'll be back with more Roundtable right after this.